And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Tim. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the players, every player, on the roster.
Makes it a two-point game.
There's your mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three on. Luka Magic!
Welcome to 77 Minutes in Heaven, a Dallas Mavericks podcast that's part of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Tim Cato. I write about the Mavericks. We've got Dave Dufour. He talks about the Mavericks. And we have an entire roster to look at, Dave. Every player, like, I want 5 minutes of your thoughts on Nate Hinton before we get to the end of the show.
I don't know if I have 5 minutes worth of thoughts at this point on Nate Hinton, but, you know, I do like him.
Well, that's all that matters. He gets the Dave Dufour
seal of certificate. Approval.
Yeah, seal of approval.
It's a
that's
seal.
That's a better word than certificate.
Yeah, it's an official seal. Not a plush seal, not a toy seal, not a seal on a beach, but it's like a gold embossed seal of approval for Nate.
Speaking
Hinton.
Of seals, I hope all of your windows are properly sealed and that you're staying warm, Dave.
Yeah, it's cold.
It's very cold.
Yeah, it's cold. It got to -9 last night.
-9? Goodness.
In Texas.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I didn't sign up for this, Tim.
That's not a number that should be associated with our great, wonderful state, which has no problems.
No. It's perfect here. So, you know, hey, before we jump into our little roster check-in, we should just note that the Mavs have looked a little better.
Yeah. Quite a bit better, I think.
Yeah. It's the stuff that we've talked about. They're making the shots that they should make at a higher clip than they have been. And it looks better.
Yeah.
But man, there's still some issues.
Yeah. And with the format of this episode being player by player, I don't know how much we're actually going to touch on team defense as a larger problem, but it goes without saying that is the biggest issue for this team right now. And mm-hmm. whenever they play next, it won't be Wednesday. It could be Friday and Saturday. It's possible one of those games also gets suspended or postponed, I believe the right wording would be. But that is where the team can make its improvement right now. And well, if it continues to be an issue, obviously it will be the sole focus of our next pod. But let's just go player by player. I've got the list up right here, and I figure we just go by minute played averages. Just a nice, easy way to kind of coast through the 17 players. Obviously, we will talk a lot more about the first 10 players or so than the rest. We'll kind of breeze through that.
Hold on, Tim. In our pre-production meeting, you told me that this podcast was just going to be about Boban.
You can't trust me. I changed my mind
and
a lot.
The need for Boban to play 40 minutes a game, it's long overdue. Like, this is just, it's been needed.
41 minutes in honor of Dirk.
That's what we need.
Does he even have 41 minutes on the season?
Would the defense get worse?
He has 108 minutes this season, Boban does.
Would the defense get worse if Boban was the center for 40 minutes? That's an interesting question.
It would. But it's hard to imagine the defense getting worse. I'll say that much. Yeah. It's bad. It's bad. I don't have energy. I'm too cold to think about.
The offense is better. That's good.
Maybe they're just cold. Maybe all the players are cold, and so they're not moving up to the speed they should be on the court. You ever think about that?
No, I literally have not thought about
that. You ever play basketball cold?
The hockey
it's not
rink?
Fun.
Yeah, I hate
playing
basketball cold.
The first 10 minutes before you really get that warm, you get warm. Just get warm. Yeah, it's rough. Feels like the air is just a little bit denser. So, anyway, Luka Doncic, he's very good. He set a career high with 46 points. That is a lot of points, and it's funny that he had not hit that before. That his previous career high, if we're talking regular season and postseason, was actually that 43 and the game-winning shot he hit against the Clippers last August. So that was his career high.
I mean, he's been over 40 three times in the last five games.
Yeah, he kind of would get to 42 a few times and get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was inevitable that this was going to happen. And he is, you know, he's incredible. It's wild to me that he just added a mid-range shot, that he's taking three times as many.
Completely shocking.
Yeah. I mean, it is and it isn't, like, in the sense that obviously every single thing about, you know, this player has, you know, every single part of basketball has always come easy for this player. But it shouldn't be this easy. That's absurd.
You know, if I can add some context here, right? Like, that's a look that he gets.
Right.
Because as much as we have, you know, shaken our fists at him for how bad he's shooting threes, teams still guard him. They're still, like, opposing defenses are telling you that Luka can shoot threes just fine. Enough that he's guarded. And so, you know, Luka, he wants to get to the basket. He's great around the basket. He's great in the post. Well, defenses know that too, and they don't want him there. So the mid-range is there, and now he's actually capitalizing on that shot. And I guess I'm not surprised that he's making the open looks, but I'm surprised that he's doing this well. After last season, I just wasn't impressed with his mid-range game at all.
I need to write about it. I think we could kind of break it down to like four different types of shots that he has mm-hmm. just emerged this season as taking. Just put some numbers on it. He's taking about 16% of the shots he takes are from 10 to 16 feet, and he's hitting 51% on them.
Yeah.
Great number.
And 48% on the longer two.
Yes. Yeah. 48% on those. And he's not taking as many of those, and that's good because it's obviously harder to keep percentages up on shots that are longer than 16 feet, but not threes.
Mm-hmm. He also now, by the way, has his best career 3-point shooting percentage.
Yeah, he's up to 34%. And I tweeted the other day and I got people mad at me. I feel like they just missed the point of the tweet. My tweet was that when Luka is hitting threes, he's the best offensive player. And I do feel that.
But he's got to hit threes though.
Right,
hit that qualification, yeah.
I mean, him hitting threes is just this season's LeBron. It's really not that much different. So,
well, I mean, I understand the premise of what you're saying, but I guess if we're going to be pedantic about it, then you're absolutely insane. But I get the spirit of what you were saying.
I mean, offensively, I don't understand how they're fundamentally that much different. I mean, they go about what they do in different ways. But Luka is averaging more points off drives than any player ever has since we've been able to kind of track that stat, which I think is only 10 years or so. But that was that came from Sports Illustrated's Michael Pina. He had that stat in an article, I believe, today. And I thought that was pretty interesting and telling. So when you have a player who's that dominant driving, and then, you know, on nights where he is hitting his jump shot as well, it's very, very difficult. And this is why we were surprised the offense was down, because that type of player is a top 10 offense by themselves. And, you know, maybe not if Wes Iwundu and Josh Green are both on the court with him. But generally, you put some competent NBA players, which the Mavericks have and are finally playing and have all healthy again,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be a top 10 offense, probably top five, just by the sheer power of Luka alone. And that's what we're seeing again. So no real surprise there.
Yeah, he's now officially having like a ridiculous season.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that
yeah.
the shooting has normalized.
Yeah, he's instead of just like plateauing, you know, which would have been a perfectly fine thing for a second-year player going into a third year, it'd be perfectly fine if he just plateaued at where he was. But he's now, I'm comfortable saying he's now playing better. He's now showing the improvement that we've seen every year of his basketball life, I think. And so it shouldn't be surprising. It isn't that surprising because of his history. But it is unbelievable that a player is just makes it look this easy and is this good at getting better. You ready for the next player?
I am.
Let's talk Josh Richardson, who is averaging about 32 minutes per game, second most on the team, which I'm not sure I would have predicted with his up and down. But I think that's mm-hmm. about right. That's about where he needs to be.
I mean, like ideally, you know, it's that much or more. But I'm glad that you brought up the up and down. I mean, it's just it's been pretty inconsistent. In their four straight wins that they just had, I thought we saw a better version
Agreed.
Than we've seen otherwise, which, by the way, should be expected. Like, I think that we're going to get the best Josh Richardson Dallas Mavericks version as we approach the playoffs, as he's learned to adapt to playing with Luka and Porzingis and has gotten healthy. You know, remember this guy missed a bunch of time. I do want to see him shooting the ball more. I think that they need him to be more aggressive. But it seems like the corner is turning.
I feel I've seen where I've gotten good vibes from him, definitely, when I see him on the court. You know, he's under 30% on threes. That's not good enough. But it's also not who he has ever been as a player. He's always been, even in seasons he shot like, you know, 32, 33%, that's still, you know, he's still well below that. And so I expect that to get better. He's averaging the third most assist on the team, but it's only 2.7 a game. I like that he had a couple outbursts where he had, I think, 8 in another game where he had like 6 or 7. I think that's a good sign. I've seen some solid passing. The thing with him is just I want to see more made layups and more attempts at the rim. Just his, you know, I want to see his ability to get there.
Well, that's the thing about the 3-point shooting, right?
Right.
Is like, certainly I'd love to see the 3-point attempt rate go up, but you have other guys who can do that. So if he's putting pressure on the rim, his utility to the offense goes up in my mind,
right,
in my estimation. You know, if he's going to take 4 threes a game and, you know, be a 32% 3-point shooter, that's not a shooter. If he's going to take 8 a game, that's great. But at 4, it is not good. And so if he's not going to take those, he needs to continue putting pressure on the basket because it'll open stuff up for other people. And to me, that's the reason why you go from Seth Curry to Josh Richardson, at least on the offensive side. You say, this is a guy with a little bit more dynamic off the ball or off the dribble game, at least attacking the basket. We need that more than we need a guy who can shoot threes. That was kind of that's the equation on the offensive side.
Yeah, he's taking 16% of his shots are within 3 feet of the basket. So yeah, that's the same as Tim Hardaway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that the player that Richardson projects at is a more dynamic rim attacking player than Hardaway. It needs to be, you know, just because obviously he doesn't have the shooting that Hardaway does. Individually, I thought Richardson's looked good defensively. Don't know why it hasn't translated to a better team defense. It's very weird. It's very weird they're this bad.
I have a good idea as to why.
Why is that?
But we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get
there. Well, next up, Dorian Finney-Smith, another player who I think individually has been pretty good defensively, maybe a touch worse than what we saw last year. Doesn't so much get like manhandled in any matchup. Just seems to, I don't know, I feel like his defensive errors or his defensive weakness is just like mistakes, and he'll lose someone. And it's not like you see him being targeted defensively by any means, and certainly he still comes up with good plays. But yeah, I'd like to see a little more consistency. It is good that his 3-pointer is back on track.
3-ball looks great.
Yeah, 38%, and he's firing away.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken as many threes as Richardson has, and you know, 5.1 a game. So he's just about back to the player that he was, and I think that, you know, his defensive level and effort, he always gives effort. I think most of the players on the team give effort. Yeah, it was just last week or maybe 2 weeks ago that I had the whole effort thing on this very podcast. But yeah, no, I think that he'll start looking better defensively as the team starts looking better defensively, and very excited to hear whatever this theory is as we get to it.
Oh yeah, no, and again, he will benefit when we get to the guy that we're going to talk about. He'll benefit if other people do their job. And like, you know, it's funny, Dorian Finney-Smith, it's interesting. It's kind of like Maxi Kleber. I think a lot of times, you know, he just gets stuck in an assignment that maybe he's not quite suited for, and he plays over his head. And so you see him do that and you're like, wow, that guy, what a defensive stopper we've got. But then, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way because that's how basketball works. And you kind of get this wild swing in feelings. I think Dorian Finney-Smith has been excellent for them, especially as of late, and extremely consistent. Yeah, there are going to be the defensive mistakes. I mean, every player makes defensive mistakes, but I think you live with that with the way he's playing on the other side of the ball, because his defense is good, And the offense is actually kind of matching that. And I think that's a good thing for them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's found money.
Yeah, I think that's spot on.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Tim Hardaway's next in minutes per game. He's averaging about 31. He is shooting 39%. He is a bit worse as he went from a top 20 percentile spot-up shooter to someone who's now above average. I haven't checked his stats recently. I know that was the case about a week ago. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine they have normalized all that much. And that's fine. Like, he's still a crucial part of the team. You need someone taking those threes. That's important. Obviously, Luka's always going to generate a bunch of threes for his teammates. I like that he's been attacking the basket to get himself involved at times. I've seen some finishes from him that I would not have expected, where he took a lot of contact.
Love how he's running second units.
Yeah,
when he's getting the opportunity. That's big.
I think that's a good role for him. I like him. I like him off the bench. I think that it makes sense. It makes sense. I mean, I wasn't sure how it would look overall, and certainly was a bit scarred, I guess, by how badly it went last year when he started the year off the bench. But he's been good, and I do feel like him being involved in a game, if he's not involved, then Dallas can have some issues, and so games that they have not been in, it was the second Atlanta game. Where they were trailing and just didn't look like they were going to have it. And Hardaway comes in early fourth quarter,
running those units without Luka, without KP. And I think that look, those lineups that they've been running there have been really, really good for the Mavs and got them back into that Atlanta game.
I agree with that. I think that getting offense in the non-Luka minutes is very, very important. And Hardaway doesn't always make it look... he's not running. He's not a pick and roll maestro who's doing the same things as Luka, obviously. And some of his shots are hard. Like he goes and gets tough buckets, which gives me a tiny bit of concern about how sustainable it is. But he's always been a tough bucket getter. And so it's more of a situation where, maybe this isn't the best possible way. But, between him and Brunson, and we'll get to Brunson in just a sec. I think that I feel better about the non-Luka minutes. In the past couple weeks, that's been a huge source of improvement for the team overall, and I think that's a positive development that's going to help normalize or has helped normalize this offense to where we think it should be. Porzingis is next, and I feel like this is where your moment to shine is coming.
Well, listen, I'm a broken record right now. it's the defense with Porzingis, and our colleague, my good buddy Seth Partnow, wrote about it in his analytical look around, where he actually even included one of the more confounding defensive possessions for Kristaps Porzingis, and he doesn't look right when he's moving defensively, and it is just it's not great at all, and your point of attack defense can be great. But if you're giving up stuff like he gives up at the basket, it doesn't matter. And that's why it's so hard to judge the defense. Because what does it look like if you have just a league average center playing defense behind these guys? And I'm not talking about the offensive end because we know how much he raises the ceiling on the offensive end. But this team should not be treading water with Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis on the court. They should be blowing teams out. And they're just not doing that right now. The numbers are pretty damning for those two on the court in particular. And they're fine with KP off the court. Like, they do better with him off the court and Luka on. That's a problem. Like, they've got to find a way to solidify that defense inside with Porzingis on the court. It's the only way this team can have any sort of playoff hopes, not making the playoffs, because I think they're going to make the playoffs. As we see, they're a better team than they've looked like leading up to the last week or so. But if they're going to do something in the playoffs, they've got to figure out how to defend with Porzingis at the five.
Here's a little peek behind the scenes of theathletic.com, I actually had a feature really focusing on Porzingis and his health and his injury and his rehab, and then also just, you know, kind of addressing how preventative rehab and preventative medicine and modern medicine kind of work in sports in this day and age. We're going to run it today, which would be Tuesday. We decided to hold it for a couple of reasons. One, my editor was without power for like 20, 36 hours or something. So that was one reason. I also just didn't feel right to run a big feature on a Tuesday where this many people are really struggling in the city. And I know that obviously includes a bunch of our subscribers as well. But second is that I kind of, you know, when I started this feature a few weeks ago, it was started more with a, you know, with an optimistic spin. And I still have some level of optimism, but I am concerned. I'm definitely concerned that, you know, by now I thought Porzingis would be looking mobility-wise, kind of like himself. And he has been turning it around shot making-wise, and that's good. And that's obviously important. He, you know, you got to have at least something that he's doing. He's doing that. And you know, the threes are going in. I always expected them to. I'm glad he's taking as many as he is. I always thought that he probably should take more than he does. So I think that's a good positive development. But I agree that so much of the defensive breakdowns are caused by Porzingis being asked to guard a pick and roll. And, you know, some of it is the coverages, and they do ask, the Mavericks do ask Porzingis a lot of times just to drop in a very passive way. And that sort of passive defense is going to lead to issues if you don't have the personnel, the perfect personnel to really wall off the rim, like Milwaukee, who standardized this type of defense. And, you know, they had Brooke Lopez and they had Giannis. And, you know, even if KP could be Brooke, which clearly he's been worse than that this season, but even if he could be, you know, the Mavericks don't have a Giannis. So that does make it a little more difficult to replicate that system. But then you ask, is there another version of defense they could consistently be running that would put KP in a better position? And I'm not sure there is. I don't think I want KP switching when he does switch on to a
well,
three.
Well, because he can't move.
Yeah, he can't move. Like, he's getting burned by Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, which, granted, you know, that's going to happen when you get a big on a wing, but those are bigger wings, and you know, if he doesn't have a chance at those guys, and he hasn't, then he has no chance at guards. So you definitely don't want to switch a guard big pick and roll.
Well, the other thing is, just when he's coming in to help, like the way he's moving, if he's not recognizing stuff early, he is just constantly getting there late.
Yeah, I've seen too many instances where I thought he should challenge a shot. Like, you know, his block numbers is up there, but I think that it's very clear watching him that he doesn't pass the eye test as a rim deterrent. He is not scaring people away from the rim. In fact, people are very open to challenge him. And, you know, sometimes Steph Curry is just going to kind of wedge his body into you and get a spinning floater or a spinning layup off glass underneath the glass. You know, like that is an example of a play that kind of sticks in the memory.
His, you know, his fouling is just like barely, like slightly up. And I actually think that's a bad sign, because he's clearly moving slower defensively just on the eye test. I'd like to see him fouling more, because it means to me that there's at least more a deliberate effort after you're late to try to get into the play and mix something up, you know. And I know that might sound counterproductive, but it's just, you know, he's got to improve his recognition of what's happening on the defensive end, and then obviously the follow through. But so much of it with him is that he's moving so poorly that if he's not pre-rotating to where he needs to be, he's not able to get there in time.
So yeah, we'll have a, just to close the loop, we will have a Porzingis feature in the probably not this week now, but in the coming days. I do want to kind of jump back and use this piece, which I think is really interesting, has a lot of interesting information. But I do want to jump back and just kind of look at this new, not new issue, but just an issue that I didn't think would be continuing as long as it is. At this point, you know, I don't think it's right to publish this feature without, you know, really addressing that, at least to some capacity as well. So, you know, once I have a little bit of information there, I think we'll get that piece out. So there's the behind the curtains peek. If you're good on KP, we can jump over to Maxey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm good. I mean, look, again, I'm just going to sound like a broken record until he looks like he looked before, you know, he got hurt in the bubble last year. And it stinks to say it because it's clearly physical to me.
Are you still talking Porzingis?
Talking about Porzingis, yeah. But, you know, because sense. I just can't, it's very hard to ignore because he's the elephant in the room for this team. If he's performing up to the standards that we have all set for him, we don't feel the same way about this team. We feel much better.
I agree. I think that from the moment he was traded for, he was always traded for being seen as a two-way center.
And that's right.
If he can't be a two-way center, then the dynamic of what he means on this team and what he represents to his future changes. So definitely not out on him getting back there, but yeah, no, it's a concern.
I'm all the way in on Maxi Kleber.
All the way in. Same.
Love him too. Love him.
Love him when we agree on this podcast.
The guy, he's been great.
95% of the time.
He's been great.
It's like 94% of the time, which is Maxi Kleber's free throw percentage. Would you have known that?
Well, I'm looking at his stats, so yes. he's literally missed one free throw this year, but he's not shooting many. Listen, I think Maxi's been fantastic, and I talk about this all the time. I believe that he is playing over his head as far as the expectations for him. I think that's a great thing. Like the Mavericks are getting a ton of value out of his salary because of how good he is, and his flexibility is just fantastic, you know, and you can trust him defensively. He's being so aggressive shooting the three ball. I mean, I don't know. I think Maxi is really good.
Yeah.
That's it. He's having a great year.
It's weird he's not the pick and roll threat that even that he was two seasons ago.
Yeah.
He's just bad at two pointers. He shoots 36% on them. I think that'll normalize a little bit, but that is a weird quirk to his game that he's really turned into only a 3-point shooter, which is fine from that position, and he's hitting them the best he ever has. You know, probably will
fall
from.
He defends though.
Yeah, and he defends. I think his defense is still looks a touch off for me, but it looks a touch off as in like he had a major respiratory illness and it affected him worse than any other player on the team. So that's where I'm seeing that. I think that he's obviously a very valuable player to this team and they will continue to be. Jalen Brunson is killing it. He's been fantastic.
You think they could have used him in the playoffs last year?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, you know, that like it's just so funny to me when you watch Jalen Brunson and you see the role that he's able to play and you think about how, you know, he bumps Trey Burke down the depth chart into a role more suited for Trey Burke. You get solid playmaking, you get solid shot making, you get solid defense. I mean, you know, Jalen Brunson, it's just funny. Like he's a perfect Villanova player. It's role player university. And I think Jalen Brunson is a perfect role player for this team. He can start and you don't really like, it doesn't hurt you. If he's starting for you, it helps you. He's a good player, but he's perfectly happy coming off the bench. Been great in those second units with Tim Hardaway. Jalen Brunson is awesome. And it really does make me think about a missed opportunity last year in the playoffs. I mean, it's maybe they beat the Clippers if they have Jalen Brunson. It's a crazy thing to say, but they seem to have caught the Clippers at the right time, and they were one guy or two guys short. I think Jalen Brunson was one of them.
Brunson filling the creation void that this team clearly has to a degree. Probably the most important development in the past couple months in terms of stuff that wasn't just expecting to change. Like I wasn't sure if he was able to fill it to the degree that he has, but he has absolutely. He's been great. He's, you know, we mentioned him up top when we were talking about Hardaway. You know, Brunson has been another key factor to the Mavericks getting better in the non-Luka minutes. That's important. And then just, you know, I think it's just as important when he's on the floor with Luka that, you know, Luka does have a person he can pass to. And that's why I think that we have decided that the Hardaway, Richardson, Finney-Smith, Porzingis with Luka, that fivesome isn't the closing fivesome anymore. That you know, that's what we envision heading into the season. But unless Richardson does kind of morph his offensive game to have more pop and juice to it, which again I still expect it will to some degree, but I don't know if he's going to be anywhere near the level that Brunson is creating right now. And mostly Brunson's creating his own shot, and that's fine.
Need Jalen Brunson to get that 3-point rate up though. That's my if I'm going to give some constructive criticism, I'd like to see more threes from Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He does shoot. I do feel like most of his threes, I don't have the stats in front of me, I do feel like most of them are catch and shoot. So that part's good. It's good that he is taking, you know, the shots created for him. About 85% of his threes are assisted. So I don't need him creating his own threes. Clearly he is a, what he does best in terms of creating jump shots is in the mid-range. And he's really good at that. And he hit, and he's efficient enough to make it worth it. So I'm fine if he's not creating his own threes.
I'm not.
Out there.
I'm not.
Interesting.
Shoot more threes.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I mean, I think that it's a three-point league. So in that sense. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I guess the big question is if he's going to start shooting self-created threes, is he going to make them at the same clip? Like maybe he just doesn't have that in his bag right now.
Maybe
and
not.
If he doesn't, that's fine. So,
but you're going to change the geometry of the court. More guys shooting, like shooting off the dribble and creating your own shot is the most valuable skill you can have in the NBA. He can clearly create his own looks. And he's good at it. I think if he swaps some of those mid-rangers for threes, you're gonna pull the defense away. It's gonna make everything easier for everyone else. So if I'm given criticism, that's it. That said, Jalen Brunson is one of the few guys that it's really hard to nitpick because he's been so good.
Yeah, I agree with that. We can start going a little quicker now that we're past the main seven.
Past the good players.
Yeah, no, I mean it is interesting, funny, disappointing. I don't know. There's some adjective to the fact that there's really only seven rotation players, and then Rick will choose to use James Johnson, Willie Cauley-Stein, Trey Burke, Dwight Powell, but not consistently every game. And then even past that, like it's really an 11-man team in
right.
Boban.
That in Boban.
That nobody else, like this team does not have depth.
I want to pull at that thread just a little bit because, you know, we talked about Andre Drummond. We talked about like bigger names that they could be going after. We've even talked about Giannis, you know, before he signed and stuff like that. It feels like they could really use the eighth, ninth, and tenth guy on this team.
Yeah.
Right? Like are those guys just out there? Is there anybody floating around that is interesting to you? Is Dwayne Dedmon interesting to you at all?
I'd be lying if I said he was.
Sure. But you'd also be the first person to admit it if he was, right? Like
I don't think they need another big man. I mean, I think that's weirdly enough where they have the most depth. And I do trust Cauley-Stein, Powell, and Boban. You know, I do trust one of those three when they need another big man in the rotation. I trust one of those three to fill the void. Where they're missing is guard and wing depth. Here, I'll kind of rattle off and stop me if you have any differing thoughts on any of these players. But you know, I think James Johnson is best as a kind of energy spark player. He just is not a good enough shot maker.
Yep,
doesn't create two pointers. Doesn't hit threes.
Four/ small ball five, and I like what he does energy wise. But if it's not there, don't play him.
Yeah. Yeah, can't be in the rotation anymore. He just wasn't good enough. Cauley-Stein, I like a lot. I do think that he's also best served not being relied on every single game, and we've seen that. But clearly, you know, I actually think that, you know, his numbers are wild. Like they're far and away their net rating is best with Cauley-Stein on the court. And you kind of look at two-man duos, and it's like I think the top five are all Cauley-Stein, which is going to happen when you have the best net rating on the team. But it's very funny how good that well the team plays with Cauley-Stein. A little bit of that is statistical bias because I think he has a shorter hook from Carlisle than other players.
Absolutely.
So when he is not playing well, he gets taken off the court shorter. So basically he just doesn't have bad stretches to kind of weigh him down. So I do think that there's a little bit of that going on, but he's good. He probably should have a longer leash, quite frankly. He's been that good. And yeah, I'm impressed. I just love
that he's athletic.
Yeah.
You know, getting some athleticism in the middle makes a big difference for this team.
Trey Burke, I'm good with 5 minutes a night. If he's hitting shots, he's hitting shots. If he's not, then, you know,
he
doesn't play a game. Dwight Powell, another energy guy, you know, kind of different look than James Johnson. Although if you kind of think about it, they functionally do similar things. Obviously, Johnson does more ball handling and passing, and Powell will be more of a role threat. But otherwise, they're non-shooting four fives who are energetic defensively, but not amazingly good.
And cramped your spacing.
Yeah, exactly. So he's a good player to have it, you know, as an option. And that's, I think, about all he is going to be for the foreseeable future. But fingers crossed for him. Obviously, I'm rooting the best for him to get back to a previous, you know, a pre-injury form, although I don't think it's super likely. But he'll be better. He'll keep getting better. Achilles recoveries are something that, you know, you really see. You really get back to your best 18 to 24 months after.
Yeah.
And we're just a little bit past 12. So maybe by the end of the season, he is pushing for more of a full rotation role. Wes Iwundu and Josh Green are the same player right now, which isn't ideal for Iwundu.
No.
He's not better for a rookie. They're not better than
Josh Green.
A rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally
okay,
fine
okay
for
Josh
Green.
Yeah. little worried, you know, of course, a little bummed out that they didn't, that, you know, all the players drafted around Green are performing and
player of the week. Sadiq Bey, player of the week.
Yeah, so it's not just Desmond Bane anymore. It's Sadiq Bey. It's Tyrese Maxey has been good.
Yeah.
He at least had one good game. I don't know if he's been consistently good.
Maxey's been okay. He had one good game, but a lot of times, like, I actually think Maxey could use some time in the G League just to kind of get some more reps against professionals. But listen, judging any rookie right now is a bad idea.
I agree.
I like Josh Green coming out of the draft. I still like Josh Green. I agree with you that those two guys being the same player is way worse for Wes Iwundu. And I wonder, you know, like, is that just a wasted roster spot for them at this point?
Yeah, but you can't really cut them because they guaranteed him money.
And you need bodies because of the way this season is. So
yeah, if they hadn't guaranteed him money, I would just waive him and go sign a more useful player.
We talked about how they added all this wing athleticism, and, you know, it hasn't worked out. But still, like, I think you take those bites at the apple. It's still worth getting Wes Iwundu and hoping that it works. It just didn't. I mean, that's kind of roster management. But, man, I'd rather see those minutes going to Josh Green.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah. It's a bummer that Iwundu, like, I saw why they thought Iwundu might work out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been worse than he was in Orlando. The other weird thing. Like, he was a better player in Orlando last season. Granted, he had a more stable role, which says something about Orlando and where they're at depth-wise, but he did have a more stable role, and maybe that affected it to some degree. But yeah, I would legitimately just advocate for going and getting a different player, if not for that guaranteed money he has on the sheet next year, which would reduce how much spending power they have next offseason. And we know that, you know, the team's entire future at this point revolves around that offseason, which is not a great spot to be in. But again, well, that's a much bigger topic that we'll circle back to at a later point, maybe next week, in fact. And then Boban is who Boban is. We know who he is. And then Tyrell Bay and Nate Hinton are all not ready. So it's good that they're off with G League teams, because that is functionally the best place for them.
Yeah, and I got to say, like, really lucking out getting a G League bubble, because these are guys, I mean, if they hit, the Mavs have really struck some gold. And I think that getting an opportunity for those guys to get some reps and to be able to know what you have is huge. And you know, I don't, have you been watching the G League games at all?
No.
I've watched the Ignite. I haven't watched any of the Mavericks games, but I've watched the Ignite because those guys, you know, it's go ahead and start some draft prep. But
I mean, I keep an eye on some tweets, but yeah, no. Yeah, I have not been following.
We might see some of these guys, these G League guys that are playing in the bubble, really get a big boost out of it in a way that maybe they wouldn't out of a normal G League season. So I'm curious to see how that all plays out, but you know, I think I want to say I heard Tyrell Terry was looking pretty good. I might be making that up though.
He had one game where he had big stats, but it was like 25 points on 25 shots or something like that.
Okay.
But still, getting stats is good. Yeah, he's got some extended run and blowouts, and he hadn't really put up numbers. Like, just even getting numbers, even inefficiently, is a good thing for a young player. So, and to your point, I think that one of the toughest things about the G League is the travel, and having it all in a bubble, I think, is a much cleaner environment for that. I guess,
dude, you're a rookie.
Cleaner, but
you're a rookie. All you're doing is lifting weights, eating, playing games, and practicing. And I could not imagine a better environment for a rookie. It's kind of. It's going to be interesting to see the young guys coming out of that G League bubble And I wonder, when we look back at the NBA bubble and we look at some of the young guys that got to experience that, and when we watch the course of their career and how different it might be because of it, I think this G League bubble could be very similar. And you're going to see these guys in huge roles in the G League, because that's how the G League works. It's interesting. That stuff's going to be worth watching, I think.
I think so. Dave, my desk is in the coldest part of my apartment. And we've been talking for about 42 minutes here. So yeah. I think we can wrap here. And I'm going to go.
My desk is actually in the warmest spot in my house, and that is not a joke. It is bastard. Way too hot. No. It's way too hot during the summer.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Typically that is the Dallas or the Texas problem, the Texas tradition. Mm-hmm. It is really hilarious that our infrastructure broke down.
Well, it's not funny. It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, hilarious. Like hilarious in a morbid, but yes, obviously it's very sad. But this was always going to happen. Like, our infrastructure had been band-aided together for years now, decades, if we're being totally honest. And so, you know, if it wasn't the winter, it was going to be the summer at some point. So that is hopefully we can things patch it up in an appropriate way.
We're almost through it.
Everybody stay warm.
Please stay warm. Stay home. Don't drive in this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I know some people, you know, if you have to drive, you have to drive. And if you don't have to, then definitely avoid it. So that's it for us. So we'll be back next week, and we will see y'all then. Thanks for listening. Oh my God.